Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vavu Min Aleph by the two dots. Tanu Rabbanan. A person uses these lishonot in order to get married. Harayat ishti. Harayat arusati. Harayat knuyali mikudeshet. Those three lishonot work. Those are pretty straightforward. You are my wife. You are my betrothed. You are acquired by me. Mikudeshet. Those are pretty straightforward lishonot that work in terms of kiddushin. Harayat sheli. Hariyat birshuti, hariyat zkukadi. So in these three lishonot, which aren't as straightforward, over here, you are mine, you are in my possession, you are attached to me or connected to me, mikudeshet, then that works as well. The Gemara says, velit ninhu kulu kahada. The bright is bringing down three that work, and then three that work, why don't you just bring down six that work? Tana tlat, tlat. Itana brings them down 3-3. Shem inhu vigarsinhu. That's the way he heard them. That's how he received them from his rebbeim. And so therefore he's conveying them in the same manner. He didn't hear all six of them together. He heard three. And then he heard three. He just brought them together in a single braita. But he brought them down the way that he originally learned them. And you could see that there might be a reason for that, which is that their nature of these lishonot is different. And therefore they're categorized independently. Ibailuhu. So now the Gemara wants to know other lishonot, which are less obvious than the first six lishonot that we brought, but have some relationship to a marriage or interaction between a husband and wife. Miuchedet li mahu. If you are designated for me, you are uniquely mine, does that work? Rashi over here quotes the pasuk of Vayud Basar Echad. That is used in Breishit. So there's another additional aspect of this that relates it to specifically marriage. Miuedet li, you are my designated, my bashert, particularly set aside for me. What's the din there? And then Rashi again brings a lashon, asher lo ye'ada. Ye'ud is the terminology that's used by an ama ivriya to describe the marriage there. So again, not only is lashon without the pasuk, possibly related to marriage, but the pasuk reinforces that this is lashon of marriage. Ezrati mahu, you are my helper or my sidekick. Negdati, you are my opposition. Mahu, both of those come from the pasuk of Ezer kenegdo. So then again, you have a meaning even without the pasuk, but the pasuk only serves to reinforce the fact that this could be used in the context of marriage. Atsurati. Mahu, what's the din of arutzurati? Rashi says lashon atzeret. Atzeret means to stay back, keep in abeyance. Shetei ne'esefet imi labayit. It should be gathered with me into the house, which again, atzeret means to latzor, means to stop, or to gather together. So here it's to bring together, to keep her in the house with me. But then he says, ve'rabutai amru, my rebbeim said, Lashon ki isha atzura lanu. This is in Shmuelav when David is running away from Shaul and he ends up by Nov Ira Kohanim and he wants to get some bread from the Kohanim that are there. So he, Achimelech there, says, just checking out whether they're okay if they're not tamei tumat keri, if they're not together with women. And so there it says that ki isha atzura lanu. There are no women here. We didn't have any interaction with women. But Rashi says, "V'lo nihira." Rashi rejects that understanding because da yitzura mimenu kamar da mechamelech. That's the opposite of what we want. There, the atzura is not in the positive sense of engaging with the women, but rather separating from the women. And therefore, he thinks that that is not the lashon that is used here. It's not based on the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, but rather simply from the pashtuta lashon, which means to bring her into the house to gather in the woman. And it wanted to know if that lashon works, then it would be slightly different than the other psukim or the other words that we use here, because all the other words have a particular association with the pasuk. That's probably what drove the rebbeim of Rashi. But nevertheless, Rashi says he doesn't see the pasuk as supporting that. Whereas if you look at Tosfot, it says, V'ri miyashev lishlan dekra. The Ri solves or resolves this problem. Kepeirush rabutav, tachi peirushu, ki isha shaita etzlenu mitmol shushom, heyazeh, aval achshav anachnu teorim. That atzura lanu means not now, but rather it describes the events of the past. The women were with us in the past, but they are no longer with us. So rather than being a negative statement like Rashi says, which is that we are not together with women, it's saying, yes, we were together with women, but that was in the past, now we're not. So that's how you interpret it, but that means that Surah Lanu is read in the positive sense of being together with a woman. Tzalati, mahu, my rib, does that work? Skurati, mahu, my replacement or my fill-in, does that work? Tachti, mahu, in place of me, does that work? These three rishonot come out of the pasuk of when Hashem takes the tzela of the Adam, vayiskor basar tachtena. So all of these words come out of that story, whereas you have the tzela, lizgor, and tachti, all relate to that pasuk that is involved with the replacement of the rib of the husband. Tfusati mahu, that you are taken busy now, meaning that I've taken you off the market. Lukuchati mahu, you are my purchase. So the Gemara wants to know all of these, as all these lishonot, which again, even independent of the psukim, have some connection to marriage or relationship between the husband and wife, but they're only enhanced by the fact that there are psukim that relate it specifically or particularly to marriage. Gemara wants to know, in all those cases, do those lishonot suffice in terms of generating the marriage? So Gemara says, at least, pashut mi ochado. Let us at least answer one of these lishonot. The Tanya, Omer lukuchati harizo mikudeshet. So lukuchati does work. Shum shenemar ki kach isha. Because not only is that something that deals with marriage, it deals with the particular sukim that tell us about marriage. And then ki kach ish isha, which is the source for marriage and kiddushin min haTorah. So here lukuchati is related to that. That works. It only answered that one question. Others remain a take or unresolved. So yibay lohu. Charufati mahu. My charufa, does that work? So the question relates to the lashon of charufa. Lashon in the Torah of charufa is used by Heshifcha necherefet leish. So there, the word term charufa is used in Parshat Kedoshim to describe a relationship between a party and a shifcha. What the nature of that relationship is subject to machloket tanaim, as to whether this is an Eved Ivri who's engaged to a Chetzia Bat Chorin, Chetzia Shifcha, or whether this is an individual who's engaged to a Shifcha Kenanit. And that will make a difference. How you view those will make a difference. Because if she's a complete Shifcha Kenanit, then there is no Kiddushin. She's not Jewish. There's no form of Kiddushin. So therefore, using a terminology that relates to a relationship that has no Kiddushin in it will have no impact. On the other hand, if it's according to the opinion who says, Chetzia Bat Chorim and Chetzia Shifcha Kenanit, then the Eved Ivri does have Kiddushin or the ability to generate Kiddushin with the Tzad Chorin Sheba. And therefore, using the term Charufa would have the meaning similar to that of Kiddushin. Yeah. So Tashma, Detanya, Haomer Charufati, Mikudeshet. Someone who uses the term Charufati works. Shekem Biyuda, Chorin Arusa, Charufa. That is because in Yehuda, the colloquial term for an Arusa, just because that's what they did in Yehuda, why does that impact on the rest of the world? They're not the majority of people out there, and why should they govern with regards to the use of this word? Okay, in Yehuda, it makes sense. But outside of Yehuda, why should they govern what the meaning of the word is? Now we have to amend it to read this way. Homer charufati mikudeshet. Someone who uses the term charufati is mikudeshet. Shenemar. So they quote the pasuk that we described before in Parshat Kedoshim. So that shows you that charufa is associated with marriage. Va'od. In addition to that, biyuda korim larusa charufa. So to support that understanding, we see not only is it used in the Torah, but it's also used by lay people to describe an arusa. Mar says biyuda va'od likra. Once you have the pasuk, what do you need Yehuda for? What is Yehuda doing to be additive in this case? Now, that's not necessarily the strongest of questions, because many times we find the fact that Lashon HaTorah, Lashon Bnei Adam are independent. That the Torah uses a language in a certain manner, and then people or lay people use it in a different way. And what would govern here would seemingly be the way that people use the terminology in the colloquial. So, the question is not as strong, but the Gemara sees it, either it is or it isn't. And therefore, putting the idea of Yehuda here doesn't really help. Elachik Amar. Omer Charufa B'Yehuda Mikudeshet. So now the Gemara narrows the scope of the Braita and says that if you use Charufa in Yehuda, it's Mikudeshet. Shekein B'Yehuda Korim Larusa Charufa. So that's why it works inside of Yehuda. So that outside of Yehuda would not work because the term doesn't carry that weight or that meaning with it. Because it's used that way in Yehuda, therefore it works as a method or means to create Kiddushin. When we mentioned the machloket here with regards to charufa or the havamina with by charufa, and then the conclusion of the paraita by charufa, at first we thought that charufa and the explanation of the pasuk was a chetzia shifchia chetzia bat chorin, and therefore we thought it was obvious that the word charufa should work. And then what was Yehuda doing to help us? In the end, we say no, that charufa is a lashon that describes a case in the Torah of Kananit, where she is not Jewish at all. And therefore, charufa would not work in order to engage. The only reason it works is because they use it in Yehuda as a synonym for arusa. And that's why it works in Yehuda, and it's particular to Yehuda, even though it's strange because seemingly we, the halacha, say that isha necharefet, or the shivcha necharefet that's mentioned in Parashat Kedoshim, it's referring to a chatzia bat chorin and a chatzia shivcha, then the way that the Braita concludes here is just the opposite of that. It concludes that really it's talking about a shivcha kananit, and only in Yehuda does the word charufa work, which seems to be against the halachic conclusion of how to interpret that pasuk in Kiddushim. B'maya skinan. What's the case here? B'maya skinan over here is a segue into a new topic. B'maya skinan is not a particular description of the situation by the charufa, but rather it's a description of all the words that we asked about above, which is what exactly is the situation in which those words were said. If they're not on the topic, and then all of a sudden he says to her, Harufati, Minayoda, my kamerla. It's out of context, and being out of context, it has no real meaning, the word outside the context of marriage. If you're discussing marriage, and then he says, be my charufa. So then you have understanding of what the word charufa means. If it's out of that context, the word charufa does not carry that weight or that meaning. Rashi explains here, b'maya skinan, tekami ba'ilan, ihabu kedushin olo. And then, is it yes or no? B'chein b'hanach lishnei digerushin. Shelo yad medaberim al esa gita. Same thing with lishonot of divorce. There's certain lishonot of separating or divorcing that have the same problem, which is that if you say the word out of context, it has no meaning. In context, it has meaning. So same question. It's not that here we're talking about Kiddushin and Gittin at the same time. It's just a halachic expression. These two areas require a specific language. Now, you may be able to waive some of those needs or specifics when you're in the context of discussing the marriage or the dissolution of the marriage. Without that, these words independently would not associate necessarily, or you would say that they have meaning. Vela, so what are you going to tell me? So then, if he's dealing with her in the topic, then even if he says nothing to her, it should work. You don't even need to make that statement. It's none. They're engaged in the topic. In the process of dealing with the topic, discussing the matter, then he makes the overtures. The overtures not in verbal terms, but rather overtures in a action. He hands her money. They're talking about getting married, and then he hands her the ring. He hands her money. They are talking about getting divorced, and then he hands her the piece of paper. Velo perish, and he makes absolutely no statement about what he's doing. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Deo, that's sufficient. The fact that they're in the parsha of discussing these matters, then any action that is done at that time is governed by the discussion. And therefore, you don't need the particular statement. The statement's only when you're coming from out of context, and all of a sudden you want to generate kiddushin, or you want to give the get. Then you have to make a statement that gives context to whatever you're doing. But if the context really exists, maybe you don't have to say anything. That's the shita of Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tzarich lefaresh. Rabbi Yehuda on the other hand says, you have to articulate it. Now, of course, if you do articulate it, it's a much better situation, a much simpler situation. The question is, if you don't articulate it, does it work? So it might. According to Rabbi Yossi, he says, that's enough. It works without the articulation. Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't work without the articulation. Nevertheless, We would rather have you articulate it because then there's no uncertainty as to what's happening. So, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Shmuel, locha ki Rabbi Yossi. The locha is like Rabbi Yossi, and therefore context is sufficient. So now Rashi over here, you just note when he says, Behu asukim beoto inyan, Rashi writes over there, Shayu asukim bidibur iskei kedushim ad shat netina. That until that point in time, they were involved in discussions, and then he makes the overture, then he takes the action. So therefore, that discussion beforehand gives you the context in which it has meaning. It's not all of a sudden he gives it to her and then starts speaking about the topic. Or that they were talking about the topic before, and then he comes back and then gives her something. No. It's that they're speaking about it, and then as they are in that process, or as he completes speaking about it, he hands her the monies, or he hands her the get, then it has meaning. So now, again, if they are speaking in that context, you don't need any words. So then, what's the necessity over here for charufati in the context of speaking about marriage? You don't need anything. So I the olam b'daberi my adiskegi tabikidusha, v'ita yayiv lav shatik hachanami. Had he just given it to her and said nothing, we would have been fine. Ha b'chamayiskin and yayiv la v'amar la b'hani lishne. But over here, it's a case where he handed it to her and used one of these lishonot. So now, this is, sometimes you have this within halacha, which is that if you're just silent, then everything works because, like here, the context gives you the power to engage the woman because of the context. But sometimes you can say something that undermines whatever's taking place because of the context, or what otherwise would have been the default. So the default would have been here that it would have been fine and everything would work. But you're speaking up, actually undermines or is to the detriment of the situation, because now you use a language that doesn't necessarily mean marriage. You use a language that might have other meaning. So it puts in doubt what you're doing. And therefore this is the question, which is what exactly is the situation in which those words were said? Is the context where it's out of the blue and he comes and uses one of these words? Then the Gemara says, doesn't seem like that should have any meaning, because yes, they do have a meaning of marriage or possible marriage, but that's only when they're used in a context. If they're not used in a context, then they're meaningless. So Gemara says, okay, we'll give you context. But now that you have context, Gemara says, well, we pass like Rabbi Yossi, you don't have to say anything. So Gemara says, sets up the case here and says, no, you're right. Had he said nothing, according to Rabbi Yossi, it would have worked. But he now throws in one of these other lishonot, v'achi kami b'ayle, and this is exactly the question. Hane lishnei de kedushe kamarla. Are these lishonot of marriage? Or maybe these are going to be my right-hand woman for doing this work or for engaging in this activity. Doesn't mean that you're going to be my wife. Just might be we're going to be in a partnership now to do something. So take the Gemara leaves all of these unresolved, which is all these lishonot. Even in the context of speaking about marriage, they may not be sufficiently strong enough to generate marriage because there's uncertainty as to the meaning of the lashonot, or these languages that we expressed above. Gufa. So now the Gemara goes back to describe this. Case that we spoke about before. They're in the context, and then he takes action without giving a description or any disclosure about what he's trying to accomplish. Rabbi Yossi Omer Doyo, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tzarich Lefaresh. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmo, who? Shosukim boto inyan. So that's what we mentioned in Rashi before, is that they're still engaged in the matter. That they're still engaged in the matter. It means that they haven't left the topic, means they haven't closed this section of their discussion, and it's still open. It's an open part of the discussion, and therefore, when you do it, the context really gives strength to what you're doing. It's a machlok ketanaim. Rabbi Omer v'hu shasukim boto inyan. Rabbi says that they still have to be engaged in that topic. Lazar by Rabbi Shimon Omer, afal pi she'eino sukim boto inyan, even though they have left the topic. V'lav da sukim boto inyan, miyad yada ma'kamrala. Wait a minute, the whole reason they need to be on the topic is to give context and meaning to the action. If you've already left the topic, then how does the woman have any idea what he's doing over here? Am Rabbi mi'inyan li'inyan boto inyan. That is not exactly what we're thinking here. But one case, Rabbi says you need to be in the topic. Rabbi Blazer, Rabbi Shimon says you don't have to be in the topic. No, what it means to be in the topic and not in the topic are very close in meaning. Rabbi says literally you're in the discussions, and therefore obviously the context works. Rabbi Elazar but Rabbi Shimon says minyan l'inyan. So Rashi says shepasku b'daber b'kiddushim mamash v'yum b'daberim b'dvarim acherim miu l'davar tzarchei zivukam haya. They left the topic of marriage, but they're still on something topically relevant to getting married. So at first they were discussing marriage, then they discussed about where they want to live. So that's, again, topically relevant and seems to be almost a continuation of the discussion, so you don't have any break in there, which takes you off topic. And so therefore the context is still maintained because of that. Or Rashi makes it even more obvious. Kamo, yesh lach nedunya? Do you have a dowry? They're asking him, do you have parnosa? Do you have a way to support my daughter? I mean that there are conversations that are a continuum of the discussions of marriage that are direct developments that you would expect in these types of discussions. Others suggest a broader definition of minyan, inyan, boto, inyan. Rashi seems to be that it's still topically related. Others suggest maybe they moved on to talk about other people's shiduchim, other people's marriages, or the conversation is continuing and it still is part and parcel of their original discussion, but it's not as directly connected as Rashi suggests over here, which is it still revolves around issues of marriage. And therefore, those in Yanim, according to Rabbi, are too far off topic already, and they've lost the context. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, you've still maintained the context because you haven't left the greater topic of marriage. Amar Ravuna, Amar Shmuel, Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi. And this is what we saw before. The Ravuna Amar Shmuel says that the locha is like Rabbi Yossi. Amar le Rabbi Yemar the Ravashi. Ve'lahad Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Again, it's another quote from Shmuel. Ko she'eni yodei b'tiv gitim v'kiddushin lo yehei lo esek imahem. Fortunately, this is not a policy that is followed by many, which is that if you're not an expert in gitin and kiddushin, you should not be involved in that area. Because the only thing you could do is cause problems, or you only cause detrimental impact to the situation. Rashi says, Liot Dayan Badavar, you shouldn't be a judge, shouldn't be an adjudicator of these situations. Shemi Yatir Isur Erva, Vize Yivut, Sheini Yachol Etakein, because maybe you'll be Matir, someone who otherwise would be an Erva, and then you're gonna do something that cannot be corrected. Because if this woman goes off and gets married, and then has children, they'll be Mamzerim, and this is a mistake that cannot be rectified after the fact. You can't change the fact that this woman was still married when you allowed her to go off and get married to another party. So don't get involved if you don't know what you're doing in this case. Tosafot says, on the other hand, Rabbeinu Azriel Perish, Shalo Yidaber Min Hashim Al Iskei Kiddushin LeKadsham. Don't use this methodology. Don't be involved with women in order to get married to them. Shpamim Shatei Mikudeshit Bamiratam Omen Tinatam. Once you have context, then you have a problem because any activity within that context will be deemed to be kiddushim. Velo yavin. You won't even notice that the fact that you just got married because you were in the topic. He says, Vekasha tinach mi kiddushim, gerushin ma bekach. Says, okay, that's a mistake that's by kiddushin, you won't pay attention to it. By gerushin, okay. So, but if she gets divorced, what's the big deal? Because, alright, that's not the worst thing, meaning that if it's kiddushin and then she goes off and gets married to someone else, or he's not aware of it, then that's a problem. But by gerushin, the worst is that they got separated, okay, that's not the end of the world. Except, he says, what about a kohen? By a kohen, it does have impact there, because if she's divorced, he can't stay together with her anymore. He says, mi olishna di mahen lo mashmahachi, den adam yachol atei get el elishton. Person can only give a get to his wife. So imahen, he's talking about in women in general. That doesn't make sense. Because here, a get is only relevant when you're talking to a particular woman, which is the wife. But Rashi's interpretation seems to be the stronger interpretation, which is that you shouldn't be involved in halachic matters where you don't know the halacha. Afilo lo shmile had Rav Huna Mar Shmuel. Does that mean that even if they didn't hear this memra of Rav Huna Mar Shmuel that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, they shouldn't be involved with Gitin and Kiddushin? I'm like, in Hachanami, yes. That's right. Even that type of minutia you need to know. And if you don't know it, don't be involved in Gitin and Kiddushin. Again, it's a problem today, a modern phenomenon, with the advent of Rabbanim who want to help out, quote-unquote, agunot or all sorts of situations. And unfortunately, because they're not as well-versed as they should be in the halachic issues of Gidin and Kiddushin, they cause more problems or more harm than they do good for the individuals because they declare them freed or they release them without the proper protocol. And as Rashi says here, you create an ivut, sheinu yachol litaken. You cause mistakes or problems to arise that can't be fixed after the fact. And the same is true with regards to marriage, meaning that sometimes people think that they're doing a tova to have a couple who isn't religious getting married, and they say, oh, you know what? I'll get you a rav to do it. And then they get them an Orthodox rav to get them married. And then it actually causes more problems than it does benefit in the situation, because this couple is going to go get divorced later on. They're not religious. They have no shaykhut. They're going to go get a civil divorce and not get a get. And that's going to cause a problem because they were married under an Orthodox ceremony and a proper ceremony. If that's the case, their dissolution of the marriage without a get is problematic. On the other hand, if you never brought in what you thought was a nice thing to bring in an Orthodox rabbi, and they get married in a ceremony that is not considered to be kiddushin, then you have the possibility of relying on Rav Moshe Feinstein that the person, they're not married in that case. Again, the Moshe spoke about this in Gitin with regards to his machloket with Rav Henkin. But at least there you have a petach to get out of the problem. So sometimes, again, when you think you're doing a tova, it ends up doing, you're doing something that is l'ra'ah. Because now they're not going to unwind the marriage, and you created a halachic marriage which needs to be unwound by a get. You no longer have all these other kulot because you thought you were being nice and you were entering into a fray. So again, this idea that don't get involved in marriages and divorces unless you really are an expert or know what you're doing. V'chein b'gerushim. Natan la gita. He hands her a get. V'amala hariat mishulechet. Hariat migureshet. Hariat muteret l'chol adam. Hari migureshet. Again, those are lishonot that definitely work. And here, now we're going to discuss the other lishonot. This next gemara is lifted directly out of the gemara in Gitin Pehei. We just saw this gemara. It's identical to that gemara, which is pshita. It's very clear. Natan la gita v'amar la liishto hariat bat chorin. He gives a get to his wife and says, you are a free woman now. Lo amar v'lo klum. That does absolutely nothing. Because hariat bat chorin is not a lashon of dissolution of marriage. That's a lashon that is used with freeding a shifcha. And so therefore it's not relevant over here. Amar la shifchato. If he says to his maidservant, hariat mutarat akol adam, you are now free to marry whoever you want. You are now released to any other individual. Lo amar v'lo klum. Because even though it happens to be true, which is that this woman is now free to marry anyone because her freedom is the last stage in her conversion to being a Yehudiya. Nevertheless, because this is a language that's particular to the release of a wife, meaning a divorce, it's not the freeing of a Shivcha Knanit, and it doesn't work. So those two, lo amar v'kum, those are meaningless. Amar la lishto, hare at le'atzmeich, mahu. He says to his wife, you're on your own. Now, what does that mean? Mi amrina la malacha kamar la. Is he just simply saying, our deal is off, which is meaning that before you were getting mizonot from me and you were providing me masei yadayim, we're calling that off, and now you do your own masei yadayim, and I'll keep my mizonot, and everybody will be happy. That's one possible meaning of it. When he says, you're on your own, does he literally mean you're on your own and we have no relationship left? It's unclear as to which of these two lishonot is being used. That goes back to what you were asking, what is this? That they were engaged in talking about Gitin and Kiddushin over here, if they were, the Gemara is asking the same question. This Lashon of Get, where here we have a Safek, what exactly is the context in which it is said? So if it's in the context of Gitin, it's obvious that this should be for Gitin. The Gemara says, no, maybe this is detrimental, which is that Hariat Le'atzmeich, when you're in the context of Gitin, had you said nothing and handed the document, it would have been a Get. But now that you say Hariat Le'atzmeich, maybe you undermine what otherwise would have been the natural, effectively you are undermining the get that you're giving because you use a lashon that may not mean divorce, and you're taking away from the power of the context or the default that would have been because of the context. Amrele Ravina the Ravashi Tashma Tatanya Gufosho Get Shichur. This is the core essence of a document of emancipation. Hariata ben chorin, hariata latzmecha. You are a free person. You are to yourself. Hashta uma evid knani de kanile de gufei. Over there, where the ownership of the master over the Eved Kenani is so strong that he actually owns the Eved himself. He is like property to the master. And that language of Ra'atah le'atzmecha suffices. Kamalei Ra'atah le'atzmecha le'gamrei kamalei. He's saying to him, you are totally free. So if it works by an Eved Kenani, Isha, t'lo kanei le'gufa, lo kol shekein, by a woman where there is no ownership, the husband doesn't have rights inside of his wife, there certainly it should work to release the woman because it's a much lesser of a relationship in terms of ownership and property. So by there, if it works for a Eved Kenani, and we say it goes all the way, then certainly by a woman it should go all the way. You're not limiting it simply to the Malacha aspect of it. So then, Amar le Ravina le Ravashi, Amar le Avdo, in li esik pecha, mai. If an owner says to his slave, I have nothing to do with you anymore, is that sufficient grounds for him to be freed now? What does that mean? I don't want anything to do with you. It just means he's mad at him. He says, get out of here. Or in li esik pecha means that we have nothing to do with each other. You are now a free man. Mi amar le in li esik pecha de gamre, kamar le means totally severing of the relationship. Odim le malacha kamar le. Or maybe he's just saying, look, you no longer have to work for me. That's another possibility, which is, you know, you're not freed of being an Eved Kenani, but you are released from the bondage aspect of it. You don't have to work as a slave for me. So we will free you from the monetary obligations, but the Isur of Eved Kenani will remain on this individual. So they say to Rav Ashi, Tashma, we have this discussed, the Mukher Abdullah Oved Kochavim, someone who sells his Eved to a non-Jew, yetsa lechevut. He goes free. But he still needs a document of emancipation from his Jewish owner. Because, as we noted already in Masechet Gittin, in terms of an Eved Kenani, the Jew has property ownership rights inside of this Eved Kenani. Another Kenani can only have output rights in another Kenani. He cannot buy the goof of the Kenani. So therefore, if the Kenani buys this from the Jew, he bought the monetary aspects of the Eved, but the Isur aspects of the Eved remain with his original owner, because he can't sell them. That means that he is deemed an Eved Kenani until he is freed by the original owner, the Jewish owner. I'm Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Bamed Dvarim Amurim, Shlokatav Alav Ono. The only time he needs a document of emancipation from his original Jewish owner is if he doesn't have an Ono written on him. If he wrote an ono, zehu shichriro, that is his freedom. Hechidami ono. So what is this ono that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is speaking about? When you run away from him, I have nothing to do with you. I'm not going to exert claims over here if you run away from the non-Jewish owner. So that we see there that the lashon of ein li esek becha is sufficiently strong to be a severing of the relationship and to say that the Eved Kenani goes free in that instance. And therefore, you see from here that the Ein Li'esek Becha should work to free an Eved Kenani. So now, we move into the core of Kiddushin, issues of Kiddushin, a very, very hard topic actually, which is, Amar Abaye, HaMekadesh B'milve Einu Mekudeshet. Someone who marries through a loan is not married. So now over here, Mekadesh B'milveh doesn't work. All the Rishonim say the same thing. You can see Rashi says it. Because, De'lo Ya'iv Midei B'shat Kiddushin, the time of marriage is not giving her anything. Because a milveh l'hotzah nitna. Because a loan is for being used and is out of your possession, requiring shalah, and they're hers immediately. At the moment you give the loan to the woman, it no longer belongs to the individual. The loan is given, and in that instant that it's given, there's no more ownership of the individual. It belongs to the debtor right away. There are a number of reasons for that. First of all, the debtor does not have to repay the same money that you handed to them. They may have to repay the same value, but the money or the physical money that you handed to them, you do not expect back. That's number one. Number two is your expectation is that they're going to utilize that money. You're not lending them money to put in their pocket and then come back and give it back to you. You're lending them money to utilize that money. So your expectation is that the money is going to be used. So the failure in the Mekadesh B'milveh is that there's no consideration in this case. Because whatever you gave is gone already. On the other hand, when you have a matana that you give to the individual, then when you hand them the money, there's still a connection between you and that gift. Because you're basically putting a string attached to that gift. Which is, here's the gift. And with this gift, you are married to me. So that gift, first of all, still exists, still here, physically. It's not as if it's gone already, as if we assume that it's utilized or going to be utilized. But it's also coming with a string attached, and that's why it works. Although, on the other hand, when you lend money, the moment that the recipient gets the loan, it's done, it's out. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore. It's as if the loan becomes an intangible object immediately, which is as if the money is spent, and now you just have an IOU. That's the nature of a loan. A loan is exactly that, that you get a commitment from the debtor to repay it, but the monies themselves are gone from the moment that you hand it over to the debtor. It's as if she owned that money all along. It was her money all along. The moment you're handing her the loan, you say it, it also doesn't work. So there you are handing her something. But the Gemara says you're not handing her anything because a loan is different than a gift. A loan means that whatever is there is gone immediately, and all that's left is the IOU, which is the commitment of the woman to repay that. You have nothing to work with. You have nothing there that's to work with to give you the kiddushin or generate the kiddushin. So now the Gemara says, "Ba'anat milveh mikudeshet." On the other hand, if it's from the hana of the milveh, then it works. Rasula sotkeim ipnei haramat ribit, and it's asur to do that because of haramat ribit. Ma'as hayanat milveh echidami. What exactly is this case where he's using the hana of the loan to engage this woman in marriage? Ilema da askifa, that he has now agreement with her. Damarla arba bechamisha, the repayment of 4 is with 5. Haribit malyatohu. So if the deal is that he lends her 4 zuz and she has to repay 5 zuz, so in that case you're talking about ribit. You're talking about, say, charging interest. Because then the repayment, which includes the additional money, so with that additional money, maybe he could engage her because that's beyond the loan. But if that's the case, forget about talking about marriage. You have a problem here of ribit. You have a problem of charging interest because he's asking to get back more money than he lent. And that's the definition of ribit. Definition of ribit is you get an excess of what you lent in return. And so that obviously can't be the explanation over here. That he lent her 4, he wants, he's going to get 5 back, and then he waives the 5th pruta in order to engender the marriage. That's just not going to work because you're talking about an illegal transaction. Now, you could formulate this question in one of two ways, that it's ribit ma'alioto, that it is real ribit or absolute ribit over here. You could say, since it's absolute ribit and he's not entitled to that money, and he has to return that money, or Beit Din can come and take away that money from him, therefore, when he's mikadesh, the woman with it, it doesn't work because it's not his money. Or the Gemara's question is not about the kiddushin. Even if he was mikadesh, the woman with this vehicle of you pay me 5 for 4, it would work. The only thing is that it's ribit gmura. We wouldn't allow this. Why are you calling it haramat ribit when it's absolute ribit? And so that's why the Gemara doesn't think that that can be the explanation for the case in this situation. Avod hainu milveh. That's a loan. Forgetting about whether it's ribit or not, you're still dealing with the mekadesh milveh. There's nothing has changed here. If you lend 4 and you're getting 5 back, that's still a loan. That is not something where he owns it. Where it says, lo, tricha da arvach la zimna. He extended the repayment terms of the loan. So the way that Rashi describes it over here is, he says, listen, the due date is coming up, and now you would pay me to extend the due date. And that they do all the time today, that people go out and solicit bondholders to get terms changed in the deal or to extend the terms of the deal. And they make a payment in order to facilitate the acquiescence of the bondholders. That payment is a hana. So what he says is, listen, I'm going to extend the loan beyond the due date. You would have paid me to do that. Meaning that people will make a certain amount of remuneration in order to extend the loan. And therefore, my extension of the loan has embedded in it hana, some benefit. That benefit to the party who is having the loan extended, to the woman, that hana, you would have paid for that. You would have paid me to extend the loan. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend it without payment. But the payment you would have made, or that benefit, I'm going to marry you with that benefit. So there's the hana'a here, which is separate from the loan, because that is something someone would make payment for. That's something that's value, that is not the loan itself, but a value that somebody would compensate for, and I'm going to get married with that. Now, that sounds like interest. So Rashi says, "Vafilu lagar natar lo dami klau." That's not considered to be real interest, because the lo katzla mide, the lo mide shakol mina. Rashi says it's only haramat ribit over here. It's only a problem of looking like ribit and not actual ribit because, number one, lo katzla midei. He never defined the value. That's number one. Velo midei shaklamina. And he never took it from her. He never collected the money from her and he never defined the value. Because of that, it is considered to be haramat ribit and not real ribit according to Rashi. Now Rashi says that certainly if he forgives the whole loan, that definitely would be hana'a to the woman by which he could marry her. I mean that wouldn't you pay someone to forgive the loan? Of course you would pay them. Or there is a huge benefit in your forgiving the loan. And therefore Rashi says it's a kol shekein. The Gemara could have explained that. The reason the Gemara doesn't do it is to teach you the chiddush that there is no rebeat, real rebeat in the other case. And there, you can still get married with that hana'ah, even though we don't allow it because haramat ribit. But if you forgave the loan, of course, it would work. So, there are Rishonim that argue on Rashi on both aspects of this. First of all, whether it's a kol shekein to a forgiveness of a loan, does that really have a tangible hana'ah which you can marry by? There's some that say no, that the forgiveness of the loan, the woman is focused on the loan still. The forgiveness of the loan still keeps her connected to the actual debt, rather than the benefit surrounding it. On the other hand, when you have an extension of the due date, there it's clear she's not focused on the loan, she's focused on the extension of the repayment. That extension comes with a hana'ah, and therefore the hana'ah is something that she can deal with. On the other hand, with the forgiveness of the loan, it just simply is the same monies that we were discussing before, and therefore those that believe that by forgiveness of a loan, it would not work because her focus is on the loan itself. That's number one. Number two is the Balei HaTosafot disagree with Rashi over here and say that which Rashi said that this is not considered to be rebeat is absolutely incorrect. This is full-fledged rebeat because over here you're taking money to extend the loan. That is the definition of rebeat. The definition of rebeat is someone owes you money and then they pay you for keeping the money in their hands. That's what interest is. Interest is I pay you to let me have money. Oh, if I pay you to let me have money for more time, that's the equivalent of interest, which is that I'm compensating you to keep the loan outstanding. And therefore, that is ribit gemura, ribit ktsutza. And therefore, Tosafot is unwilling to accept Rashi's explanation here that he's paying to extend the loan. Other Rishonim have nuanced differences with Rashi by changing the time period where the loan is extended. According to Rashi, the loan is already outstanding, and then you're extending the loan by the payment of the money. Whereas other Rishonim review the extension of the loan at the outset. He marries her with the extension of the loan originally, or giving her the time originally. So that's why it is not considered to be ribit ktsutza. In addition, that's why there is hana'ah over here through the loan, because of the fact that it was done at the outset, when the loan was initiated. Or that it was done at the time of repayment, and the money is right there, and then the extension of the loan is ki'ilu, he's giving the money back to her. So those are nuances on Rashi's pshat that the other Rishonim bring down. On the other hand, the Tosafot goes down a different approach here and suggests that the ribit, it's a case here where there's a third party involved. It's a case where this individual who wants to marry her goes ahead and convinces her creditor to extend the time on the loan. So therefore, since it's not going directly from the debtor to the creditor, if money goes from the debtor to the creditor, that's called ribit. And even if the individual is a shliach, even the president is their agent, that's still a problem of rebeat because they're acting on your behalf. But if you just intervene with an individual and say, listen, creditor, give this person a break, give them some breathing room, extend the due date on the loan, then you can do that. And you can even compensate the creditor to do that because the payment to the creditor is not coming directly from the debtor and you're not acting as an agent of the debtor. So since you can do that and won't be considered rebeat, it's not outright interest. And nevertheless, when you make that payment, it is a benefit to the debtor. That benefit, you can marry the woman with. It's not rebeat because you're not a direct party to the loan. You're not the debtor or the creditor. And you're making a payment to the creditor to extend the terms to the debtor. Not because the debtor asked you to do it. And not because you're a party to the loan. So when you do that, you're doing the tova to the debtor. There's no question that you're helping out the debtor. And there is monetary benefit over here. So through that benefit, you can marry the woman. That's the way Tosafot formulates the case over here. And that's how he avoids the question on Rashi. Why isn't this rebit ketzutza? Why isn't this full-fledged rebit? Because you involve a third party. And by making an arm's-length transaction, the person who's compensating for the extension has nothing to do with the loan. That's how you make it that it's not rebit in this instance. The creditor makes him now that he's provided her a benefit that she otherwise would have paid for herself. Rebit is where there's one party who benefits and they're 100% certain they're going to get the benefit. Then case where the other party either gets the benefit or there's a chance that you won't get this payment, you'll lose this money, then it's no longer rebit. That's the easy test to know whether it's interest or not interest over here. When she pays him the money to extend the loan, it's all his benefit. That might be, by the way, the explanation for why Rashi thinks it's not rebit ketzutza over here, because it's not a one-sided transaction. With the extension of the loan, he's marrying her, and marrying her generates hana'ah not just for him, but also for her. And therefore, maybe here it's not rebit because they're both parties are beneficiaries of this situation, which is the extension of the loan and her paying the rebit is not just a payment of rebit, but it is also a kesef kiddushin that enters her into a marriage, and therefore both parties are beneficiaries over here. It's not a one-sided transaction where he's the only beneficiary in the situation. And you can see that in the Tosafot Riya Zakein, who brings down Vim Tamar, the Chol HaPerushim Heichi Hava Haramat Rebit. According to all these explanations, what does it mean that it is Haramat Rebit? That's a trick that looks like rebit. Rebit? Gemura, rebit ketzutza. It's regular rebit. When the debtor pays rebit, he gets no benefit from that rebit. Simply money that he has to pay for the extension of the loan. Since here there is two parties involved, and the beneficiaries are not just the creditor, but also the debtor. Therefore, it's not considered to be rebit ketzutza. Amar Rava, helech maneh amanat shetechzeri uli. Rava says, if the individual says to the woman, take this 100 zuz, on condition that you return it to me. B'mecher lo kana. If you use that as a vehicle for acquisition in a transaction, it doesn't work. Bisha eino mikudeshet. If you use that to marry a woman, it doesn't work. Bipidyona ben, ain beno padui. If you use it for pidyona ben, it doesn't work either. Bitruma, on the other hand, when it comes to truma, yatsa yidei nitina. If you have to give the truma to the kohen, then you can give the kohen the truma in this manner, and then he'll return it to you. And when he returns it to you, obviously you can't eat it, because truma is a surah lizar, but you'll be able to sell it and monetize the truma, because he gave it back to you. Vasur la salt kain. You can't do this, mipnei shenireh kohen amisayev bebeit agranot. Because it looks like a kohen who's working to get his matnot to kihuna. Because over here, the kohen is doing this to benefit the party that's giving. And in his benefiting of the party that he's giving, he will get more trumot or more matnot from this individual. And so it looks like he is working or purchasing the truma, which the class of kohenim is otherwise entitled to without having to do anything. And so therefore, the Chazal said that one should not do these things. Or a kohen who helps out in the granot is problematic. First of all, he precludes other kohanim from getting the possible matana. But in addition, he makes it look like the matnot kuhuna are compensation and not gifts that are given or obligations on the parties to give. So, Maika Sava Rava. What does Rava hold over here? Because if you see in the list of dinim here, he has a bifurcation of the din between truma and other items. Ika Savar Matana Amanat Akhzir Shma Matana. If he holds that a gift that is given on condition that it be returned, that's called a full-fledged gift. And in the interim, the party owns the object. Afilu kulu nami. Then all these items up there should work because the receiving party got something. If they got something, then the transaction go through, the pidyon habechor should go through, the kiddushin should work. Because savar lo shma matana, if he thinks such a gift is not deemed to be a full-fledged gift, afilu truma nami lo. Then even truma should not work. Why should it be considered a nitina by truma? The old, Harova Huda Amar. Don't we know that Rava himself said, Matana Manat Aksir Shma Matana? He explicitly says this, that when someone gifts property on condition that that property be returned afterwards, that is considered to be a full-fledged gift in the interim period. Dama Rava, Helech etrog ze amanat shetechzeri uli. Take this etrog on condition that you return me the etrog afterwards. Natalo vechziro. If he took it and then returned it to him, yatsa. Then he's yotzei the mitzvah. Vimlav lo yatsa. If he doesn't, then he's not yotzei. So as long as he fulfills the tnai, then in the interim period it was his. And therefore he accomplishes the necessity of lakachtam lachem bayom arishon, that has to be lachem, that you must own the arba minim to be yotzei the mitzvah of arbat minim on the first day. And since that's the case, when he gives it to you, even though there's a condition of return, during the interim period you own it fully enough that is considered to be lachem, it's yours, and you're yotzei the mitzvah of arbat minim. So you see that Rava says that it works completely. El Amar of Ashi, Bekulu Kani. In all those cases, it works to acquire, meaning that in Mecher, it would be considered to be a transaction, and you can have a transaction of sort, and that would close the transaction. In the case of Pidyon Bechor, the Bechor would be Padui, it would be redeemed. And in the case of Chuma, it's deemed to be as if you gave it. The Bar Miisha, the exception of marriage, it doesn't work there. The Vishain Isha Niknet Bechalipin. Because a woman cannot be inquired by chalipin using a kinyan chalipin. We already mentioned that earlier in the Masechta, that kinyan chalipin does not work by a woman. It's not one of the vehicles that is mentioned in our Mishnah of Kesef Shtar and Biyah. And we discussed the fact that even though kinyan chalipin works like kinyan kesef, we don't have a limud that brings it directly, because the limud, as Tosafot told us, is not from the word sadeh, or whatever works by sadeh works by the woman, but rather, it teaches us, Stefron teaches us that kicha is kesef. And kesef works, and that's the only kinyan that works. It doesn't extend or expand the number of kinyanim that work. And a kinyan chalipin does not work by a woman, because there is no gemira tadat, or the woman won't exchange herself for something that is worth less than a pruta. And since a kinyan chalipin can be done with something that is worth less than a pruta, it's not a vehicle of acquisition or for establishing kiddushin. So the failure over here is kinyan chalipin. Now Tosafot points out there is no kinyan chalipin over here. And matana manat achzir means that the item, it belongs to the receiving party completely when they get it. And then they give it back afterwards as a tnai that makes it work afterwards. But that doesn't mean that in the interim period it doesn't belong to that party. And so why is this called the kinyan chalipin over here? So Tosafot's conclusion is that it's not really a kinyan chalipin. It looks like a kinyan chalipin. And that really, what the Gemara is saying is over here is that it's in a nicknate because kinira ke chalipin. Because it looks like chalipin and not that it is actually chalipin. It looks like something where you hand over to the other party and then they hand it back to you, and the kinyan is done through the gemira tadat of the kinyan chalipin, which doesn't work by a woman. So over here, even though that's not the vehicle, it's too close or looks too similar to kinyan chalipin, and that's why we don't allow it to go through. Amalei Ravuna Marbri the Rav Chemia, the Rav Ashi, Achemrina Mishmei the Rava Kavateich. The way that you're explaining Rava is the way that we have the Misora about Rava's understanding of Matana Al Minat Lachzir. Now over here in this sugya, there are a number of questions, two of them very fundamental, which the Rishonim asked. The first of which is, where is the Tznai Kaful? We said in the past that if you want to make a condition, you need a Tznai Kaful. And a Tznai Kaful is missing in this instance, because there's only one condition here, which is, if you return it to me, then it is a Matana. Where is the other side of the Tznai, which says, if you don't return it to me, it will not be a Matana. So some of the Rishonim say, Eino Chanami, you need a Tznai Kaful over here. And like many other places in Shas, including the Mishnayot, where there's a Tznai, the assumption is that it means a Tznai Kaful, even though it doesn't write it out explicitly. Many other Rishonim believe that there is no necessity for a Tznai Kaful over here. And this is Tosafot, the Shitoto. Tosafot says it here, he says it in other places in Shas, which is that the necessity for an explicit Tznai, or even explicit Tznai Kaful, depends on the circumstance. And Tosafot lays out that there are actually three different types of transactions or interactions. There's some interactions whereby it's so obvious what the context of the transaction is, that the condition is built into the transaction because of the obviousness of the situation, and you don't even have to articulate the condition. Like someone who's on their deathbed and is gifting items and giving out items on their deathbed, it's clear they're doing that because they think they're going to pass away. If they don't pass away, then all those transactions are reversed, because it's obvious that they only did it because they were a shchiv meira. There are other instances where the context gives you enough information that you do not need a Tanai Kaful. You simply need just articulation of what the condition is, but the circumstances themselves are enough to tell you that this is the din. So for instance, the Gemara in Ketubot, the Din of Ketubot talks about a person who was making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael and sold off all his possessions by saying, I'm making Aliyah and therefore I'm selling off all my possessions. That articulation, that statement is enough that if he doesn't make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, that all the transactions are reversed. Because he articulated that the sales were basically premised on his making Aliyah, even though he didn't explicitly connect the two, but he did explain and articulate the reason for it. And that's enough. Like, for instance, by the case of Etrog over here, where the whole purpose of giving the Etrog is so you can be Yotzei the Mitzvah. And since that's the case, it's clear, the context makes it clear what he's trying to do. And therefore, with a simple articulation of the fact that he wants it back afterwards, we know what he wants, and they don't need it Tanai Kaful, because context or the situation gives you that type of information. There are other instances where the Tanai is coming, in essence, to undermine the ma'aseh, or in a sense to contradict the ma'aseh. And in those instances, the Tanai has to be explicit and it's Tanai Kaful. In addition, Tosafot says, but don't you have a problem here of the fact that it is a Tanai who might seb dvar echad? We just saw this in the Gemara in Kitin. The requirement of one of the requirements of Tanai b'gei gad b'nei ruvein is that the Tanai and the ma'aseh not be about the same item. Rashi reads that literally, that they can't be about the same item. Tosafot over there and over here asked the question, what about the case of Etrog? Over there, the Tanai and the Maser on the same object. You're taking the Etrog, you're gifting the Etrog, and the condition is that you return the Etrog. So therefore, Tosafot formulates it in a different manner. And he formulates it as to say that the Tanai u'maser, the Davar Echad, just means that the Tanai cannot undermine or contradict the Maser. As long as the two can live together, that's fine. But if the two are contradictory to each other, meaning that the Tanai changes the Maaseh or doesn't allow the Maaseh to happen, then that's a problem of Tanai and Maaseh b'dvar echad, and the Tanai is batel. So therefore, by the Etrog, it's not contradictory, because he's giving it to him for a period of time and then taking it back. So the two, you can accomplish both the Maaseh and the Tanai, and they won't necessarily be in conflict. That's one way that Tosafot answers it. The other way Tosafot answers it is it's a machloket about the meaning of almanat. If you remember back in the Gemara in Gemitin, almanat, does almanat mean miachshav? Immediately it goes effective with a condition, and when that condition is fulfilled retroactively to this point in time, it went into effect. Or is almanat only going to effect at a later date? And Tosafot said that might be the difference between the Gemara in Gitin and the Gemara in Sukkah, is how they view almanat. If almanat works that you take acquisition immediately, then there's no problem because you really have acquisition all the way along. And then when the Tanai is fulfilled, it was as if you had it along and you're Yotze in the midst of a Etrog. Now then, if you believe that Almanat means that it doesn't go effective until you accomplish the Tanai or the condition, then you didn't have the Etrog. It wasn't yours until you fulfilled the Tanai. When you fulfilled the Tanai, it's already back with the other individual, and therefore it's not a Tanai. So depending on how you view Almanat, our Gemara in Gitin there was talking about a case of Almanat not being Me'achshav, whereas the Gemara in Sukkah believes that Almanat means Me'achshav immediately. So that's how Tosafot deals with that issue. The second issue that is a problem over here is based on the Gemara in Nidarim. The Gemara in Nidarim says that any gift that is not gifted to the point where the recipient can be mekadesh the gift, then it's not a gift. And that has to do with the Maaseh b'Beit Choron. It's a Mishnah in Nidarim for an individual who had a neder hana'ah from his son, and therefore he gifts the entire party or wedding party he wants to make for his son to another individual, and they want to make a party. So the recipient goes ahead and says, if it's mine, I'm mekadesh everything in the shamayim. The other guy says, that's not why I gave it to you. I gave it to you so we could have the party. And that's what the guy says. That's why I don't want to accept it, because you're using me to get around the neder, and you're not really giving it to me with a full heart. And so that's the test that the Gemara uses over there. How do we know you really own it is that you can be mekadesh it. So the question that the Rishonim asked over here, how does it work by Etrog? Over here, when you are Matana Menat Achzir, there you can't be Magdish, the Etrog, because then you can't give it back. And since you have to give it back, you can't be Magdish it. So then, do you have sufficient ownership to be Yotze, the mitzvah of Arbat Minim in that case? And so the Rishonim raised that issue here. How come this is considered to be whole enough or full enough ownership? So some answer that the truth is you could be makdish it. You could be makdish it for the monetary value of the time that you own it. And that's sufficient enough ownership and hekdesh that is considered to be yours. The more prevalent view is that the test of being able to be makdish it is only when a person is being ma'arim. So when a person is trying to use this gift to circumvent the law or get around the problem that they have. But in a case where it's not done as a harama, it's not done as a trick or a way to get out of a problem, but simply as a real gift, they want to gift it to you, they want to give it to you in order to be yotze the mitzvah, and they're not trying to do any tricks. In that case, you don't need that test of hekdesh, and that's why the matanah minat achzir works in this instance. What is interesting is that the Gemara here says that Matanah Menat Achzir works in all these cases, with the exception of Isha, because it looks like Chalipin, and the exception of Truma, because it looks like a Kohen HaMesayeh BeGranot. Looks like basically the Kohen is paying you back, or paying you off in order to get the Truma, and therefore we don't want him to do that. And that's the way that the Rambam paskins, and in all of these incidents, the Matanah Menat Achzir works. There is one other case where it's not so clear, and that's the case of Pidyon Bechor. And that is, the Rambam paskins that if you do a Pidyon Bechor in this way, it works fine. The problem is that the Gemara in Bechoro tells of a case of a Kohen who received monies from a party to do Pidyon Bechor, and that party was waiting around for the Kohen to give him back the money. It was the minhag of that Kohen to give the money back after the Pidyon Bechor was done. But this father waited around, was watching, he wanted to get the money back. And Rabbi Hanina, the Kohen, says over there, you're not yotzei the mitzvah of the pidyon ben, because if you expect it back, then it means that you never really gave it with a full heart. And that means that either you weren't poded the bechor, and your son is not redeemed. So you see over there, if you give something, even and expect it back, then it doesn't work. So the Mefarshim explained that the Rambam, who says, obviously, paskins like that, Gemara, and still paskins that matanah minat achzir works, is because the difference in the articulation of what's happening. In the case where the person just gave it to the Kohen without saying anything and then expects it back, that's not a matanah, then it can't work for pidyon. On the other hand, when it's a matanah menat achzir, where the person specifically states, I'm giving it to you with the condition that you return it, over there, if the Kohen accepts it, then that is a full pidyon and it works to redeem the child. And that'll explain the difference. On the other hand, the Kesef Mishnah over there disagrees with the Rambam and says that the Kohen Mesayeh Bebeit HaGranot is not only true by Truma, it's also true by Pidyon Bechor, because that's another one of the Matanot HaKihuna. And therefore, the Kesef Mishnah says that the Gemara says that Pidyon Bechor works in order that if you did it, it would work, but we would discourage you from doing this. Basur Lasot Kohen Mibnei Shneir Kohen Mesayeh Bebeit HaGranot. That modifier is not only on Truma, but rather on Pidyon Bechor as well. And therefore, the Beit Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch paskins that one may not do a pidyon bechor ayidei matanah minat achzir, because he thinks that it's modified by this kohen mesayeh bebeit hagranot, and therefore it's improper. If you do it, it will work, but it's not the proper way. Asur lasot ken, you're not allowed to do it because of this problem of kohen mesayeh bebeit hagranot. Therefore, you have a difference in psak between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch with regards to whether matanah minat achzir works by pidyon bechor. Now, I'm not going to get too deeply into this, but we discussed this more heavily when we had this issue by the Etrog in Masechet Sukkah. But the question is, when you do a Matanah Menat Achzir, how much ownership does the party have in the interim period? We discussed that before, whether they can be Makdishit or not. Obviously, there are different tests of ownership. One of the issues is, what happens if it gets damaged during that interim period? If it's damaged in that interim period, did you own it enough? Therefore, you're not obligated in the payment of those damages because it was yours then. And you just return whatever it is or whatever you have afterwards to the owner. Or do we say that in that interim period, you have a din more like a shomer sachar or other forms of ownership that are not totally complete or responsibilities that still exist for you vis-a-vis that object, even though you're quote-unquote the owner of it. And so the Rishonim in Masechet Sukkah formulates the ownership in different ways there. There's the Rosh, the Ritva, which we discussed when we spoke about it in that instance, as to how much ownership you have in the interim and the nafkaminot of that ownership. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots at the bottom of Vav Amud Bet.